you. Hi, everybody. How are you? It's great to be back with you all. You know, I was asked by the press, why am I going out with nuns in the bus? I said, because they're nuns. It's a simple proposition. You know, you're looking at a kid who had 12 years of Catholic education. I woke up every morning saying, yes, sir, no, sister, yes, sister, no, sister. And I just made it clear, I know, and I'm still obedient. I really am, basically. It's an honor, it's a personal privilege to pay tribute to the efforts of the, quote, nuns on the bus. You know, conscience and passion matter in every endeavor. And I know no group of people who bring a greater sense of justice and passion to what they do. It's intertwined in everything. It's intertwined. It's not suggesting that people of different faiths can't have the same passion and the same concern. They do. But it's interesting. It's interesting for everybody to watch. I was telling Sister, I was with some prelates in our church in Rome not long ago, and they were talking about after the inauguration of Pope Francis. And I walked outside, Sister, and there were a group of 45 nuns from South America. And they came up to me, they recognized me and came up, and after I just met with the Holy Father, and they said, he mentioned us. He mentioned us. And I pointed out that there's a good reason for that. Every prelate should mention the nuns, because guess what? They're more popular than anybody else. If I get to pick whose side I'm on, I know where I am. Before I begin, I'd like to, as you say, in the Senate, and I thank my colleagues in the state legislature for being here, and labor leaders are here, and this is a busman's holiday for them, having to come out and stand in front of the Capitol and hear another public official speak. But I want to point a personal privilege, pay tribute to a woman who was a great, great friend of mine, and a great friend of people in need, who I'm confident would be here had she not recently passed away. Pauli Lipsum was a remarkable, remarkable woman. She was not only a friend of mine and many people here, but she was a tireless advocate for fairness and equality. And I know she's going to be greatly missed here in Iowa by everyone who loved her, but by the thousands of people who needed her voice. And Sister, you and your fellow nuns are cut from the same cloth. Sister Simone, I want to thank you and all your colleagues for your commitment to continue the fight for basic economic rights for Americans. You know, to see all the state legislators here and union leaders here, and I want to thank them for being here, and for all of you that are here on this sunny day, it gives me renewed faith. It's been a great honor. It's been a great honor to work with Sister Simone and network over the years on so many critical issues. The nuns on the bus fought like the devil for health care. And I think the reason they did is, like a lot of my colleagues in the State House here, the reason they did is they understood that health care made a difference one person at a time. They knew all those parents who went to sleep at night staring at the ceiling, wondering what in God's name would happen if one of them contracted a serious disease or if their child was in trouble. That's what motivated them. They traveled around the country to make the case for a budget being a moral document and reflective of our values and our priorities. Sister, my dad used to say when someone would come up to him, and I mean this sincerely, and say, Joe, let me tell you what I value. And my dad would look Mr. Mayor and say, don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget. I will tell you what you value. You want to know what a nation values? Look at their budget. The reason you did, sister, you knew the impact of the Ryan budget would have on our communities. You made real the consequences of the proposed cuts for Americans across the country. It wasn't just a matter of this idea of everybody says they value the middle class. They say they are concerned about income security for the elderly. Yet they turn around and they say they're going to voucherize Medicare. That simply means that Medicare is no longer a right. It means you'll get a check on a yearly basis, which will not allow you to buy back as much health care as you would have ordinarily gotten. That means everybody 50 years and younger is looking at an additional $6,800 for them to get the same health care. This is real. This affects people's lives. You built pressure, all of you, on Congress to pass a fair immigration bill because you know that a broken immigration system, what it looks like in the communities. You've looked into the eyes of those children who worry about whether their parents, they've been here their whole life and they're 9, 10, 12, 15, and wonder whether they're going to come home one day and their mom and dad are not going to be there and be deported. You know, on the way back from Mumbai to go meet with President Xi in China, I stopped in Singapore to meet with a guy named Lee Kuan Yew, who most foreign policy experts around the world say is the wisest man in the Orient. He's spoken extensively on the future of China and India, Russia and the United States. And he's 94 years old. And midway through the conversation in his home, and he speaks fluent English, I looked at him, I said, Mr. President, what are the Chinese doing now? Because I've been talking about Xi's consolidation of power. And he looked at me and he said, they're in the United States of America right now looking for the buried black box. I looked at him just like you're looking at me. What is he talking? I said, I don't understand. He said, they're looking for that box that contains the secrets that allows America to be the only nation in the world to constantly renew itself. And I said, well, I'm old enough now to presume to give you an answer what's in that black box. Two things. It's stamped into the DNA of every American that there is, in fact, a skepticism for orthodoxy. That's how we make new things. That's how we break through. And I said, secondly, they'll find in that box a constant stream of immigrants which build our country, because the people who come are the people who have the most courage, the people who are the most energetic. Some people think you sit around a table in Guadalajara and say, you know what, why don't we sell everything, give it to a coyote, and go to a country that doesn't want us? Boy, won't that be fun. The people who come are the most innovative. That's what's helped build this country. And that's why every study shows if we pass the immigration bill, the gross domestic product will increase. We will make Social Security more solvent, not less. We reduce our budget deficit by well over $1 trillion over a period of time. But you understand it, but that's not how you look at it. You understand it, but you look into the eyes of that child. That's what makes all of you different. That's what makes you so powerful, the passion you bring to this. You've gone state to state arguing for moral, economic, and social imperatives to establish a decent living wage. Because you know, there is no reason in the world why any American should work 40 hours a week and be $7,000 below the poverty rate. That should not happen in America. And folks, there used to be a consensus in America. There used to be a consensus in the Congress. Democrats and Republicans constantly increased the minimum wage because they understood what happened to that consensus. And now, once again, you're hitting the road, urging all Americans to register to vote, to participate, because that's the single most basic way to have your voice heard. I might add, parenthetically, in the last, being involved in the civil rights movement for so long, I never thought I'd see the day that in the last 8 years, 81 pieces of legislation have been introduced to state legislatures to curtail the right to vote, to shorten the polling hours. There used to be a consensus, Democrats and Republicans. It was Republicans who fought for motor voter registration. It was Republicans who fought. What has happened here? We've lost the consensus. But you know that this nation is strongest when every voice is heard and when everyone has a seat at the table. As you so eloquently said in your book, sister, and I quote, our Constitution doesn't say we the citizens, we the rich people. It doesn't say we the politicians. It doesn't say we the ones who got here first. What our Constitution says, that building our nation is about we the people. It sounds corny, but that's exactly what it is. And that's why the work you're doing to register voters, increase participation is so important, because right now, only some of the voices are being heard. And as a result, over the last couple decades, things have gotten really out of whack, folks. There's only one way to put them back in place, and that is to take a good look at what each political party is suggesting. Look, the middle class is in real trouble. It was devastated by this recession. It's already losing ground the previous 10 years. Yet everybody says, I value the middle class, as I said before. But yet, folks, our Republican friends say they care about it, but they value financial. Look, what the deal here is take a look at what each of us are proposing, what sister's proposing. This is not rocket science. Between 1979 and 2005, the share of the total income held by the top 1% went from 10% to 20%. So now 1% of the people, they're decent people, they're not bad people. 1% of the population shares 20% of the entire income of the United States. And what that's meant is that the middle class and the poor have taken a hit. They share a lot less. Our gross domestic product, that's the value of all we do in this country on a yearly basis. It's gone up 29% since 2000. Productivity, the things you do to make things better, faster, more productively, that's gone up 30%. You know how much middle class wages have gone up in that same period? 14 cents. Let me say that again. 14 cents. That's never happened before. That's never happened before in modern American history, where productivity and growth have gone up and the middle class has been held flat. This inequity isn't just bad for the middle class. It's bad for the country. It's bad for those living in poverty. It's bad for the wealthy, because inequity, income inequity, brings a drag on economic growth. You know, even Wall Street is concerned about this growing gap between the middle class, the poor, and the wealthy. Standard & Poor's, a leading financial service firm, says, and I quote, U.S. income inequality has now reached levels not seen since 1928. They went on to say, this is Standard & Poor's, not a liberal think tank. Standard & Poor's. They went on to say, extreme levels of income inequality can harm sustained economic growth over long periods. The U.S. is approaching that threshold, they say. One study shows if we had the income equality we had just back in 1980, the economy would have grown 5.5% faster. When the economy grows, everybody's got a better chance. Everything rises. But most concerning about this growing income gap between the wealthiest and everyone else is the impact it's having on our society. Because faster economic growth, as I said, means better prospects for everyone. Slower economic growth means diminished prospects for the country over the long haul. Folks, look, there's a writer named Thomas Pynchon. He wrote, if they can get you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about the answers. Let me say it again. If they can get you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about the answers. Think of the questions of every paper, everything you've looked at on television over the last 8 to 10 years has been, maybe longer. It's been, we've been asking, are corporations overtaxed? Are you kidding me? No, but seriously, what's the debate? Are corporations overtaxed? In Ireland, they tax this and that. I mean, the second question you ask, is Wall Street overregulated? That's what we're debating. Is it overregulated? Are unions too powerful? No, I'm serious. Think of the debate that we're engaged in. We're asking all the wrong questions. It's time to stand up and ask the right questions, because that's the only way there's a shot at getting the right answers. The question is this this thing that they call inversion, meaning that American corporations that have been nurtured and built here in the United States had the protection of the law enforcement and the government, had the tax breaks, had the infrastructure, the highways built to accommodate them, all those things. Is it appropriate that they can now pick up and move their headquarters to another country to get in a lower tax rate? Can any of you do that?
No.
That's the question we should be asking. Is that appropriate?
No.
Is it appropriate that over the last couple decades, of all the tax burden that is shared in America, that corporate America only pays 10% of the total tax burden? Just this last quarter, they've made $2 trillion in profits. Ladies and gentlemen, shouldn't we be asking the question that now everyone from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, from Standard & Poor's, every major serious economic institution is asking? Why is it that since 2003, just to take one time frame, why is it that with all the profits corporations have made, they have spent 55% of those profits in buying back their stock in the open market, which wasn't allowed, by the way, prior to 1981, significantly increasing the price and the value of each share that's left? It's kind of coincidental, isn't it, that now the Fortune 500 companies, their CEOs make up to 75% of their income from stock options? Doesn't that seem somehow unusual? Why is it that you got 54% of all the profits going into buying back their stock, of the top 449 corporations who've been on the Fortune 500 list for the last 10 years? They sent another 37% dividends to stockholders. That leaves 9% of their profit to go to research and development, expansion, retraining of their employees, and salary for the employees. Are you any wonder why that number is 14 cents over the last 10 years? What's happened? We should be asking the question, why do CEOs now make 333 times more than their average employee, when back when Reagan was elected president, they made 42 times as much as their average employee? What happened? Again, I'm not making here a moral judgment. I'm not saying they're bad or good. What happened? It's a question worth asking. What happened? How did so much change in such a short time? Why has corporate productivity gone up 8 times? It's a good thing it's gone up, but 8 times faster than your salary over the last 35 years. Why on earth does someone who makes tens of millions of dollars managing a hedge fund pay 15% in taxes, when a guy or woman working at General Motors making $55,000 a year pays 25% in taxes?
Amen.
Look, folks, there's nothing inherently bad about corporations or wealthy people. They're just as patriotic as other folks. But something happened. Things are out of whack. It comes down to a simple question of fairness. Americans have always done best when we've acted as one America. Because when we do, the nation succeeds. When everyone's contributing their fair share, America grows. There used to be a bargain in this country, a basic bargain. Democrats and Republicans signed onto it, business and labor. The bargain was simple. If you contribute it to the growth and productivity of the enterprise you were involved in, you got to share in that growth and that productivity. That's what built the middle class. Now it's time to restore that bargain. Deal the middle class back in. That's what you're all about. Because the middle class, when it does well, everyone does well. The wealthier get wealthier, and the poor have a ladder up. And look, folks, I have a lot of economists who work for me in the White House, for the President and I. When you say middle class, they start to give you a number. Well, is that $51,290 or $49,000? Middle class is not a number. It's a value set. To be middle class in America means being able to own your own home, be able to raise your children in a safe neighborhood, send them to a park they know they're not going to come back and get mugged, go to a school where if they do well, they got a shot to get to college, and if they get in, you can find a way to pay for them to get there. Amen. And in the meantime, if your geriatric parents need help, you're able to give them the help, and you hope that you can do enough to make sure your children never have to help you. That's being middle class. That was the American dream. That's what this country was built on. That's what we're determined to restore. And it's time for a fair tax structure, one that values paychecks as much as earned income and clipping dividends. One that values hard work as much as inherited wealth. Look, folks, we changed. There's only 114,000 plus people in all of America paying estate tax. 5 years ago, we cut their tax over the next 10 years by $1,800,000,000,000. They're good people. Do they need another $1,800,000,000,000? Imagine what we could do with that $200 billion a year to build roads and bridges, improve education, et cetera. It's time to close these tax loopholes, folks, so we can reduce the deficit, invest in rebuilding American bridges, highways, ports, providing good middle-class jobs. It's long past time to increase the minimum wage to lift these millions of people out of poverty, which, by the way, will increase economic growth, not decrease economic growth. Folks, look, we got a lot of work to do. And the reason we have to do it now is because America is on the cusp of the greatest period of expansion it's had in decades. And let me tell you why. I'm more optimistic about America's prospects than I was when I got elected as a 29-year-old kid. You notice, I don't know how many times I marched with union guys when corporations were locking up their gates, unbolting their machinery, and sending it to China, right here in this state. You don't hear outsourcing anymore. What you're hearing now is insourcing. Manufacturing is coming home. 700,000 new manufacturing jobs just since we've been in office. Not because of us, because of two things. One, in China and everywhere else, they figured out that American workers are three times as productive as other workers around the world. They figured out that you can come home here and you have a fair court system. You can adjudicate differences. Your intellectual property will not be stolen. We are now the epicenter of energy for the 21st century. More energy in Mexico, the United States, and Canada than in Saudi Arabia and the Arabian Peninsula. Ladies and gentlemen, they're coming home because energy is cheaper, because America is better positioned to lead than any time in the last 35 years. But we got to deal the middle class back in. As they come back, we got to have the bargain restored. And it's not rocket science. It's what we did prior to the 70s. It's where we were, how we treated people, how what we thought was fair. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, as I said, quote my dad again, he used to say, Joey, I don't expect the government to give me anything. but I expect them at least to understand my problem. We've not been talking like we understand their problem. Even the Democrats haven't been talking enough nationally about understanding their problem. We talk about recovery, and there is recovery. What we don't talk enough about is middle-class people don't feel it. They're still not fundamentally better off. The country's better off. Our economy's better off. But it's not like it was. And our job is to restore that. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what Sister and her fellow sisters are all about. I don't know how they phrase it, but every time I think of what you do, I think it's about restoring the bargain. Amen. Just basic, simple, decent fairness. This isn't a populist rant. This is about how you build America. And America does better, everybody does better when everyone's in on the deal. So I've said it before and I'll say it again. I say it to everybody all around the world, and I've traveled about 1 million miles now since just being vice president. And I say it here. Folks, it's never, ever, ever been a good bet to bet against the American people. Never, ever, ever. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. And thank you, sister. Why don't you guys come on up?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're the ones doing it. You're the ones doing it.